Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Good morning, everyone. And we begin this morning with day two of our series, Primarily New York, in advance of the New York primary, which is coming up on Thursday, yes, Thursday, September 13th. Today, we'll do two things. We'll talk briefly about the breaking news on a Cuomo-Nixon debate, which has now been scheduled, but which Cuomo is already taking steps to minimize the impact of. But mostly today, a hyper-geeky explainer about the IDC and why it matters to eight New York primary races and the success or failure of this year's blue wave, nothing less than that, at least on the New York state level. Now, IDC stands for the Independent Democratic Conference, and if Democrats hope to control the New York State Senate this year, it's at the heart of the matter. So let's dive in. Way back in 2011, just as Andrew Cuomo took office as governor for the first time, a small group of Democrats broke off from the party and formed their own caucus in the Senate called the Independent Democratic Conference. At the time, if you remember, Republicans controlled the state Senate, Albany was totally gridlocked, and there were serious leadership issues among the Democrats, then led by Senator John Sampson. So to gain some traction and some power, four Democrats, led by Riverdale and Westchester Senator Jeff Klein, split off from the rest of their party. Since then, the IDC has never really gone away, even when Democrats won enough seats to take back the Senate, as they did in 2012. Because of the IDC's breakaway status from the main Democratic bloc, Republicans retained control. And in 2014, as Zephyr Teachout ran against Governor Cuomo in that year's primary from the left, like Cynthia Nixon this year, the IDC announced that they would end their partnership with Senate Republicans, but reneged on the deal soon after. Then in 2016, the IDC grew to eight members, we'll go down the names, just as Donald Trump won the presidential election. That got the attention of liberal activists, fired up post-election, and by the time Trump was inaugurated last year, protesters were lining up outside IDC members' offices, calling them Trump Democrats and accusing them of selling out their party for cushy committee chairmanships, better offices, and stipends to supplement their salaries. Now, since then, the IDC has faced tough criticism from the left, which saw the group as a tool for Republicans to keep legislation that the Republicans didn't like from ever coming to a vote in the Senate. And we'll get into some of the bills, the progressive bills that never could see the light of day as we go. So come to the present. This year, pressure from the left has intensified, both from primary challengers to the IDC Democrats. That's these primaries we're going to see next month. And from Cuomo's challenger for governor herself, Cynthia Nixon. As her campaign ramped up, Cuomo, Jeff Klein, and the other state Senate Democratic leaders, the mainstream Democrats, led by Senator Andrea Stewart Cousins of Westchester, they all announced yet another deal that officially disbanded the IDC this spring. So officially, the IDC is dead. But critics of the caucus don't believe it. And in the primary, opponents of the eight IDC members, or former IDC members, as they're calling themselves, are still positioning themselves, these challengers, as the real Democrats versus the IDC Democrats, who they say are still a risk to help Republicans continue to control the Senate. Confusing enough? I know that you hyper-geeky New York political junkies know all of this. The rest of you, if you live in a lot of the state Senate Democrats districts in our area and you're a registered Democrat, this is a question you should get to know and form your own opinion about before you go to the polls. And we'll just add that on top of all that, Democrats still don't have control in the Senate. Let's leave that part out because it's too confusing. But there's still a lot to unpack here. So with us to talk about all of it are two New York politics experts and hosts of the new podcast, FAQ NYC, reporter Ozzy Pabra, and Fordham University political science professor Christina Greer. Welcome back to WNYC, both of you.
Hello.
Thanks, Brian. Hi, Ozzy.
Hi.
So I've laid out some of the political history, Ozzy, of the ADC, the IDC. Why, as a matter of progressive policy, has the IDC mattered? Technically, they are Democrats who, if you go down a list of issues and a list of bills, support most Democratic Party policy positions. No?
Yes. You can say that you are supportive of issues, but the first vote that legislators make in legislative bodies, U.S. Senate, State Senate, and the Assembly, is who is the leader of that body. The party that has control of a legislative body controls the calendar, and they control what bills come up to vote and what doesn't. So if you say, I support speed cameras, but vote into leadership someone that doesn't let a bill to renew speed cameras come up, your leadership vote contradicts and undermines your stated positions.
Christina, you want to add to that? What are some of the progressive positions, potential progressive bills that never came to a vote in the Senate, partly because of this IDC arrangement?
Well, I think Ozzy is correct. You know, the IDC in many ways, when they decided to work with Republicans, you know, the governor was quite happy about that. And what comes to mind for me is some of the legislation surrounding the fight for 15 and mandatory salaries for working class individuals, where many IDC members were slow to side with their Democratic colleagues. And I think, Brian, you mentioned sort of in your intro something that should really be highlighted. You know, this idea of getting stipends and better offices is really important to a lot of legislators. You know, they have a limited time to deliver as much as they can to their districts, and a stipend or a better office can really make or break certain people's careers in some ways, because it does allow them to reach out in different ways than, say, some of their junior colleagues or colleagues that don't have some of those benefits.
Now, let me stop for a second and just identify who we're talking about. Six of the eight IDC-related races are in the five boroughs. Then there's one in Rockland and one further upstate. So in Queens, we have Tony Avella, the incumbent, former IDC, as he says, challenged by John Liu, a matchup that's happened before. Some of you know Liu as the former New York City controller. In the Bronx and parts of Westchester, it is Jeff Klein, the leader of the former IDC, as they describe it. He's being challenged by a candidate named Alessandra Biaggi. On Staten Island and parts of southern Brooklyn, the incumbent related to the IDC is Diane Savino, up against Jasmine Robinson as the challenger. In Queens, Jose Peralta is the IDC-related incumbent facing a challenge from Jessica Ramos. In Brooklyn, Jesse Hamilton is the IDC-related incumbent going up against a challenger named Zellner Myrie. And in Manhattan, Marisol Alcantara is the IDC-related incumbent being challenged by Robert Jackson. So, whoa.
That's a lot.
That's a lot, and that's a lot of people who people have heard of but may not have known. And it's State Senator David Carlucci in Rockland. Is that correct?
Correct.
And I don't know the name of his challenger. I apologize.
Julie Goldberg.
Okay. And then there's a race further upstate out of our listening area. So we've confused you already enough. We're not going to confuse you anymore with that. But listeners, as I said, this is like a hyper-geeky explainer on the IDC. So if you have a question on what it's actually been, what it's actually meant, how real the deal is to disband it, anything or a thought, 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-WNYC. 9692 from New York Politics Watchers Ozzie Pabura and Fordham University Political Science Professor Christina Greer, two of the three co-hosts with Harry Siegel of the Daily News of the brand new New York Politics podcast, FAQ NYC. We're going to play one clip of one of the IDC challengers. This is certainly not to take his side. This is just because it's in their podcast. And to give you a flavor of how these races are being won, this is John Liu running against the incumbent Tony Avella in Queens. And Liu had this to say to the FAQ NYC podcast team about Avella's decision back a few years ago to join the IDC.
He became part of the IDC, empowering Republicans, even though we elected him as a Democrat. He's a Democrat. I'm a Democrat. If you look at the big issues, there's not a whole lot of daylight between our position, but it's the intent and it's the ultimate result of our actions. And he becoming an IDC member, that's a big deal. Now, in 2018, people really understand what happened with this IDC and how these handful of Democrats truly gave control to the Republicans that then blocked legislation time and time again that we need in the state of New York.
And what specific legislation is that?
How much time do we have?
How much time did you have, Ozzie?
We had about 30 minutes, and it felt like John Liu could have gone on for 3 hours.
What was the answer to the question about specific pieces of legislation?
One of the ones that he focused on to help explain the issue was reproductive rights for women. He said that in light of Donald Trump's Supreme Court nominee, that the Roe v. Wade court decision may be undermined or watered down, and therefore states have to step forward, like New York, and ensure those rights. And he has said that the former IDC members have empowered Republicans and have blocked legislation to ensure those rights, which are more important than ever because of what's happening in Washington. And John Liu has said that Tony Avella's vote for the Republican leadership has blocked time and time again that type of legislation from going forward. So that was one example, and I thought it was particularly striking because it spoke to the impact of Washington. It spoke to an issue that affects a lot of people. And people aren't very confused about this issue. They know whether they support it or not. They know whether they want reproductive rights. And whether or not a lawmaker enables that legislation to go forward, that was really the issue. And I thought that was incredibly important for John Liu to sort of explain that particular one.
Is there a rationale, to be fair to both sides here, Christina, that at least was in place at one time for the IDC forming? When it formed in 2011, state Senate Democratic leadership really was in a kind of dysfunctional state, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah. We're using past tense, but I think we need to use that gingerly. I mean, I definitely think, you know, when you are elected and the way the Founding Fathers set up our institutions, it's because we have a representative government, so that I am choosing someone who will essentially be my voice in Albany. And at the time, I think many voters thought that it made sense, right? If I'm going to send you to Albany, Jeff Klein, I want you to maximize your time there to bring back as much as possible to our particular district. And so this is where the tension comes between party versus individual. And I think his constituents, as you can see, as he gets elected time and time again, I think the constituents have been very happy with his ability to deliver goods and services back to them directly.
At the time the IDC was created, and to pick up from what Chrissy was saying, you got to remember 2010. The Tea Party won. It put a stoppage in what President Barack Obama was trying to do in Washington. And the big problem coming out of Washington was gridlock. Things couldn't get accomplished. And Andrew Cuomo, as the newly elected governor, very much positions himself as someone who could make government effective again. Remember his first speech after getting sworn in? It wasn't about making New York progressive. It was about making New York effective. He had people introduce him as the most effective governor. And the fact that he could work with a bipartisan legislature that helped cast him as this unique figure at a time when Washington was jammed with gridlock.
So, to, again, be fair to the IDC, is there anything that you can say they have accomplished by forming this coalition with the Republicans and having some influence, therefore, with the Republicans, that that's what they'll claim, you know, that is what they'll claim, that they've been able to get some pieces of legislation or aspects of legislation that are progressive items that Democrats want that wouldn't have gotten through had they not been in a relationship with the Republican majority?
Pre-K funding.
Really?
Yes. Mayor de Blasio in 2014 had a number of events touting this new plan to fund to have early education and pre-K for young children. And he thanked Jeff Klein and his role in the state Senate for helping accomplish this. Now, he didn't get the tax he wanted, but he got a continued stream of funding, and he thanked Jeff Klein repeatedly for that.
Christina, anything to add?
Yeah, I mean, Nazi stole my example.
Oh!
But I think it's really important for us to remember, you know, Americans like divided government. You know, they don't like one party being in control of everything. They don't like gridlock, but they do like divided government, and they actually do like this is all pre-Trump, but for the most part, the theory is so that Americans do like parties working together. This is something George Washington warned us against in 1796 in his farewell address about this hyper-partisanship. So I do think some of the positives that come out of the IDC are the fact that they are actually at the table with someone who is not of their party to really think about some of these issues, some of these not just social issues, but economic issues as well, pre-K being, I would say, a combination of both social and economic issues.
Is pre-K the only example, though, where this collaboration has accomplished anything that the rest of the Democrats would like while it's bottled up a bunch of other things?
I believe the former IDC members would also tout on-time budgets, which everyone sort of takes a credit for. They also note that the DREAM Act, I believe they say they are supportive of it, but it wouldn't have passed. It hasn't passed, but it would not have passed had Democrats only been in control, because there weren't even enough votes on that side. So they get, so they're trying to give themselves credit for advocating the right issue, and that the Democrats may have come up short on that one.
All right, listeners, if you're just joining us, it's a hyper geeky explainer about the IDC, the Independent Democratic Conference in the New York State Senate, ahead of next month's New York primary, the most contentious races in the state, other than probably Cuomo Nixon, are these IDC state Senate Democratic primaries in 8 different state Senate districts. We'll mention the names again in our area before the end of the segment with our guests, Ozzie Pabra and Christina Greer from the new podcast, FAQ. NYC, but let's take a phone call. Matthew in Great Neck, you're on WNYC. Hi, Matthew.
Yes, good morning, Brian. I was curious about the constituents of these particular IDC districts. Do they tend to be solidly Democrat, or are they more of a mixed, let's say, purple nature? And is that why these state reps and senators are able to kind of play the fence in the way that they're doing? Or are they just simply kind of taking advantage of the system in order to enhance their own political power?
And pocketbooks. So, Christina, that's a great question about the constituents. One would think if, you know, one had just landed from Mars and didn't really know the particulars of New York state politics, that if you have a group of Democrats who are enabling a Republican majority, these are probably purple districts where there's a reason that they want their constituents to think that they're a little bit bipartisan. Is that the case?
I think for some. I mean, I think take Diane Sedino, you know, who's Staten Island. I mean, we could definitely say that that's a purple district for sure. And probably, you know, for some people, they might be split ticket voters, where they might vote for Democrats for certain races and Republicans for others. They might vote for individual candidates more so than, say, just party politics. But also, we have to remember.
And just to go down the list, that might also be true, if it's true on Staten Island, that might be true for Jeff Klein in Riverdale and parts of Westchester. It might be true for Carlucci in Rockland County, for Tony Avella in Eastern Queens, where they have elected Republicans to state Senate before Eastern Queens, and Peralta too, you're saying, in Central Queens?
Yeah. And so, you know, as you said at the top of the hour, keep in mind, we're going to the polls on a Thursday, September 13th, right? New Yorkers have already gone to the polls on a Tuesday, June 26th, and we're asking them to show up again on November 6th. So our voting sort of calendar is already convoluted and confusing. So we look at the percentages of people in these districts who actually turn out to vote for their elected officials, especially in a primary where essentially the primary is the real race. So unfortunately, we don't have enough citizens watching the store. No fault of their own necessarily. It's just a little bit confusing as to when they should show up, who they're showing up for, and issue education. So if you are voting for someone, they may not even know that their elected official is a member of the IDC, because for a particular issue that matters to them, their elected official is right on.
Right.
So this other hyper, as you keep saying, geeky debate that's going on, unfortunately, I think a lot of members in these particular eight districts might not even know that their elected official is a member of the IDC and possibly taking power away from Andrea Stewart Cousins, the first black woman who would be the head. I mean, all these other things that have happened.
Right. But you mentioned first black woman. I want to explicitly bring up race and the IDC, because the original members were all white in these swingy districts. Like we were saying, Tony Avella, Jeff Klein, Diane Savino, David Carlucci, in their somewhat swingy districts. But then they added Jesse Hamilton, African-American in Brooklyn, Jose Peralta, Latino in Queens, Marisol Alcantara, Latina in Upper Manhattan. Was that a conscious attempt to diversify? And if we can assume that Democrats of color would be less likely to have a reason to compromise with Republicans based on the makeup of their districts, why did they join?
Well, I think that, you know, that's a strategic choice. I think that some of them, you know, got support during the election phase from IDC members that helped put them over the edge. And I think now that, you know, once they were elected, it made sense for them to stay with this coalition because they did get stipends and better offices and ability to ward off potential challengers who might accuse them of caucusing with Republicans. I think also, though, you know,
personal political gain. You're saying personal political gain.
Exactly. But when you mention someone like Peralta or Hamilton or Alcantara, you know, they're coming from districts where, for the voters who actually are paying attention, in a primary especially, these are strategic voters. And so, you know, what I think many elected officials in this position frame their behavior to their constituents as is basically, do you want to stay in protectionist phase or advancement phase? And advancement phase is a tricky thing, and you don't want to go with someone you don't necessarily know. And I've already got this established relationship with these individuals who will protect me and make sure that I can deliver more to you as your elected official. So let's just stay in protectionist phase. And we're seeing this in the AG's race, and we're definitely seeing it in the governor's race, where a lot of voters, especially voters of color, stay in protectionist phase because they fear that advancement phase could possibly get them nothing. So they take essentially what they're given by elected officials who are promising them a hope of advancement.
And the issue of race has explicitly come up in Upper Manhattan, where State Senator Marisol Alcantara is being challenged by Robert Jackson. Alcantara has sent out mailers, I know because I've received one in my building lobby, where she says she is the only Hispanic woman in the state Senate. And the direct appeal is that a more diverse legislative body is a better one, which many people, especially ones who are voting in a Democratic primary, would agree. What she doesn't state is that there are other Hispanic women who are also running as challengers against former IDC members. So she is presenting herself as a person who has made a deal and it helped diversify the body. What she doesn't say is there are other women who are of Hispanic, who are Hispanic, that did not make this kind of deal, that are also running this year, and that the body is likely to diversify because of that.
Particularly Jessica Ramos running against Jose Peralta, if there was such a thing as vote swapping, people in right. Upper Manhattan could say, well, we'll vote for Robert Jackson, the African-American male in this right. candidate in this race, and you vote for Jessica Ramos, right. the Latina, against that IDC candidate, Jose Peralta. In Queens, of course, no such thing yeah. exists.
And Alcantara also falsely accused progressives of holding her to a higher standard than, say, Andrew Cuomo, who is white, and other candidates who are white. And she, in a recent interview, she sort of made this case that she was being accused of something and being held to an unfair standard. And what she didn't put in that mailer was that the Senate Democratic leader she was denying a leadership role was a black woman. So with the issue of diversity, she selectively tailored how to frame it.
Andrea Stewart-Cousins, who is the majority leader in waiting if the Democrats actually right. get a pure and unified majority. Jack in Crown Heights, you're on WNYC. Hello, Jack.
Hi. I think one of your previous callers had asked if these were mostly purple districts, and
yeah.
I just wanted to respond. I recently moved to Crown Heights and was shocked to learn that I'm represented by Jesse Hamilton, who is a former IDC member. And I would imagine this is about as liberal and solidly progressive as any district gets in New York. It's, you know, Crown Heights, Prospect Heights, I think part of Park Slope. And I was very, very surprised to learn that. And I've seen Zellner Myrie, who is challenging him out in the neighborhood, in the district. And I think just sort of anecdotally, I think Jesse Hamilton is probably going to have a pretty tough race come primary day.
Thank you for your call, Jack. And the mayor on this program on Friday endorsed Myrie over Jesse Hamilton. The mayor said he's rolling out his endorsements one by one for the New York primary. He hasn't taken a position yet on Cuomo versus Nixon, for example. But when I asked him if he's coming close to that, the one he pulled out of his hat was he's endorsing Zellner Myrie over Jesse Hamilton precisely because of this IDC issue.
And when you heard his remark, I think he said Jesse Hamilton's decision to go to the IDC, I think he referred to it as disastrous or something along that lines, which makes you wonder, if it's disastrous for one candidate, is it disastrous for others? And then the question becomes, does de Blasio endorse candidates who are long shots? Jeff Klein's challenger has a lot of donors, but less money on hand. Does de Blasio weigh in for a candidate that he thinks may not win, but wants to make a statement?
Interesting. So we just have a few minutes left. Let's cut to the political chase here, Christina. Is the IDC really dead, as they claim to be?
Well, I don't think all of them will lose their seats. I mean, I think the previous caller made an interesting point. You know, he's a new transplant. One might call him a gentrifier. I don't know his background. I think it'll be fascinating to look at some of the results that we saw in these similar districts in June 26th, because, you know, when you look at, say, something like Yvette Clark's district in Brooklyn, you know, the caller brought up Jesse Hamilton. I rightfully predicted that, you know, a lot of the old school Brooklynites would go with Yvette Clark and a lot of the newcomers would go with her challenger. And that's what we saw in the data when we broke it down. So I think Jesse Hamilton might have some support from sort of some old school Brooklyn folks who are accustomed to voting for him.
But I'm actually asking a different question. Not will the IDC incumbents maintain their seats. If they do maintain their seats, will they really not reform the IDC and continue to empower the Republicans? How rock solid is that in your estimation?
I think that they'll still continue to caucus with Republicans, maybe not as openly and as aggressively, but, you know, we also might be looking at a governor. Let's just say Andrew Cuomo gets reelected. We might be looking at a governor who's somewhat absentee and who might be a little more strategic in his behavior, just because he'll be looking to a national spotlight. So I do think that strategically certain IDC members might still find it beneficial to caucus with Republicans.
I had an exchange off the air with an IDC representative trying to get them to say they wouldn't do anything to contribute to a Republican majority leader next January if they're reelected, but they would only respond so far in the present tense. There is no more IDC. We support Andrea Stewart-Cousins. When I re-asked, but in the future, might you vote in any way that would split the Democrats in a way that would enable the Republicans to have the majority leader and all the power that comes with it? They claimed that the question was confusing. So, Ozzie, have they committed to anything like this for the future? The IDC is dead today, but they could call it the IDA or the IDB or the IDF after the election and break away again. But I don't know if they have any intention to do that.
It's unclear. And anyone who's ever walked into a high school cafeteria knows you can tell students we're all in the same class, we're all together. And every now and then you recognize patterns of certain kids sitting together. And there may be something where they don't openly, as Chrissy Greer said, they don't openly call themselves an IDC. But there may be an instance where somebody walks out of the chamber during an important vote, which has happened before in Albany many, many times. So there are ways that people can informally align themselves. Sometimes they do it for regional purposes. Lawmakers on Staten Island, oftentimes, even in different legislative bodies, they share an interest in representing that borough. You may see former IDC members not dropping their independence after Election Day.
So here on day two of our New York primary series, primarily New York, in advance of the Thursday, September 13th, primary in New York State, we're just about out of time for today. And that's our hyper geeky explainer about the IDC, the Independent Democratic Conference. But one piece of breaking news, Christina, the governor has now accepted one debate with Cynthia Nixon and has already kind of done a number of things to minimize the potential impact of that debate. They've scheduled it for Wednesday, August 29th, which is going into the paying attention to the news dead zone of the Labor Day weekend. And the thing that's breaking out in news stories is that he arranged it with Channel 2 so that they are sitting rather than standing during that televised debate. Why does anybody care about that, including the governor?
Well, I mean, the governor clearly cares because this is, you know, going into Labor Day weekend. He had all the control, essentially presented his ideas to CBS and said, take it or leave it. If you don't take it, I walk. They took it and then essentially then gave it to Cynthia Nixon. So the governor has had all the control in planning this entire debate. I think, you know, when you debate a woman, and Joe Biden talked about this and had to really practice, when you debate a woman, there's sort of subtle and implicit and explicit gender dynamics. And so we know that Andrew Cuomo sometimes illustrates behavior that is aggressive, that is, I would say, condescending, that is bullying. The list can go on and on. And to decrease some of that visual tension, sitting down actually does make it seem more relaxed. I think that there are some implicit biases about a man in control sitting down. I think would work in his favor, just because he can possibly say things that are harsher, but they won't hit the audience in a way sitting. If you remember in 2010, when it was Andrew Cuomo and about five other people, rent's too damn high, we had a former porn star, lots of folks on the stage, I believe they were also sitting then, and Andrew Cuomo's body language was very comfortable. Still very dominant, but he was able to sort of let the other five kind of fight amongst each other, and he seemed in control and actually quite calm and enjoying himself. So because he's been able to structure the debate exactly the way he wants it, this was obviously one of the items that he wanted.
And a point of fact, August 18, 2002 is the first time Andrew Cuomo debated when he was running for governor against H. Carl McCall. The station was WCBS, the moderator, Marcia Kramer, a very well-respected veteran journalist who is talked about as, I think, one of the moderators for this upcoming debate with Andrew Cuomo.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
And there we leave it, at least for today, edition two of Primarily New York, our New York primary series that we will continue on most days between now and the New York State primary on Thursday, September 13th. We thank Ozzie Pabra and Christina Greer, two of the three co-hosts. with Harry Siegel of the Daily News, the brand new New York City politics-oriented podcast, FAQ NYC. Thank you very much for answering all those cues.
Thank you.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, much more to come.